Have you ever, like, really stopped to think about what's actually holding you up right now? You know, what gives your body its shape, lets you move, and even plays a part in keeping your heart beating?
It's something we totally take for granted, isn't it? This incredible internal architecture.
Absolutely. It's working away behind the scenes, and it's way more dynamic than, well, than most of us probably think. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're jumping into the fascinating, pretty complex world of the human skeletal system.
And our guide for this is Dr. Ty C.M. Hoffman. His lectures, well, they really break down this complicated system into stuff that's actually understandable, even engaging.
Yeah, they really do. So our mission today, basically, is to pull out Dr. Hoffman's key insights. Mm-hmm. We want to show you not just what the skeleton's made of, but its vital, sometimes really surprising roles.
Exactly. From, you know, keeping us upright to literally making new blood cells and even how it rebuilds itself. Get ready for some aha moments, because your bones are doing a lot more than you might think.
Okay, so let's dive in. Dr. Hoffman starts by hitting these fundamental functions, right? It's not just about having poles to hold us up.
Not at all. That support function is obviously key, but he really frames it as just one part of this bigger biological picture. He highlights several core functions, and yes, support is definitely the first one.
Right, support. And he paints this picture. Without this framework, we'd just be a, quote, writhing mass, which is quite an image.
Huh. It is vivid, isn't it? But it gets the point across. It's the hard scaffolding that gives us our shape, lets us stand, sit, whatever.
And then closely related is protection.
Yeah, definitely. Dr. Hoffman talks about bones as natural armor. Your rib cage, for instance, protecting your heart, your lungs, and the cranium.
The skull.
Yeah, the skull. Protecting, as he puts it, the most important organ, the one that makes you, the brain. It's basically a built-in helmet.
Amazing. Okay, and then movement. That seems obvious, but there's a specific point he makes.
Right. Muscles need leverage. They need stiff bones to pull on, as Dr. Hoffman says. Without that, you're back to the
writhing mass.
Right.
It's the mechanics of it.
Exactly. That leverage is what allows actual locomotion. Walking, running, waving hello, all of it.
Now, this next one surprised me a bit when I was reviewing Dr. Hoffman's points breathing. How does the skeleton factor into breathing?
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? It really shows how interconnected everything is. Dr. Hoffman explains that muscles pull on your ribs.
Okay.
And the ribs, in turn, pull on these membranes covering the lungs, the pleura. That action expands the lungs, draws air in. Then muscles relax, ribs spring back, pushes air out.
Wow. So your skeleton is actively involved in every breath.
Every single one, moment by moment.
Okay, now here's where it gets, for me anyway, really interesting. Dr. Hoffman talks about the skeleton as this huge chemical reservoir.
Yeah, the body's bank account for minerals.
Exactly. He calls it a huge reservoir for calcium and phosphate. So bones aren't just solid lumps. They're actively managing your body chemistry.
That's a crucial point. The actual bone material, it's mostly something called hydroxyapatite, basically calcium phosphate crystals. Mm-hmm. Super hard stuff, though tooth enamel is actually harder.
Right.
But yeah, the skeleton stores massive amounts of calcium and phosphate ions. And these ions are critical. Calcium for your heartbeat, muscle movement, nerve signals, you name it.
And phosphate.
Just as vital. It's in your cell membranes, phospholipids, DNA structure, energy molecules. Tons of things rely on phosphate.
So how does the reservoir part work? Dr. Hoffman explains this homeostasis thing, right?
Yeah, it's a constant balancing act. If your blood calcium gets too low, maybe you haven't had enough in your diet, your body signals the bones to break down a tiny bit of material and release calcium into the blood.
Okay.
And if your blood calcium gets too high, the bones take it out of circulation and store it. It's this dynamic regulation happening all the time, 24/7.
Which really underlines why things like, you know, getting enough calcium and vitamin D are important, not just for strong bones later,
right,
but for how your body works right now.
Absolutely. It's immediate. And there's one more major function Dr. Hoffman emphasizes. Hemopoiesis.
Hemopoiesis. That sounds technical.
It just means the production of blood cells. And Dr. Hoffman points out that all your blood cells, red cells carrying oxygen, white cells for your immune system, platelets for clotting, they all start their life inside your bones.
Inside the bone marrow.
Exactly. In the marrow, those interior spaces. So your skeleton isn't just support and storage. It's literally your blood factory.
Incredible. So from functions, let's talk about the actual structure. Dr. Hoffman describes two main types of bone tissue, compact and spongy.
That's right. Contact bone is, well, it's what you probably picture. Dense, strong, less space inside. Dr. Hoffman says it forms the outer layer, the superficial part of all bones, gives them that smooth, solid look.
And then spongy bone, which, as Dr. Hoffman warns, isn't actually spongy like a kitchen sponge.
No, definitely not. Still hard bone. But it's full of many pores and holes, as he puts it. These are formed by tiny beams called trabeculae.
Trabeculae, like little beams.
Yeah, exactly. They create this internal scaffold-like structure. It looks kind of like a network inside the bone.
And why is it like that? Is there an advantage?
A huge one. Dr. Hoffman connects this directly to efficiency and evolution. All those holes make the bone much lighter than if it were solid compact bone all the way through.
Ah, so less weight to carry around.
Precisely. Less energy needed to move. But crucially, that trabecular structure is incredibly strong for its weight. It's arranged to withstand the typical stresses put on that bone. It's brilliant bioengineering, really. Balancing strength and weight.
And those spaces, the holes in the spongy bone, they aren't empty, right? That's where the marrow comes in.
Exactly. That's where you find the marrow. And Dr. Hoffman distinguishes between two types. Red marrow.
Where the hemolysis happens, the blood cell production.
Correct. And then yellow marrow, which is mostly fat storage, energy reserve. So even the spaces are highly functional.
Okay. One of the biggest things that struck me from Dr. Hoffman's lectures was just how dynamic bones are. You tend to think of them as, I don't know, fixed structures once you stop growing.
That's a super common misconception. He really hammers this point home. Bone is continuously being partially destroyed and rebuilt. It's a lifelong process called bone remodeling.
And he gave an example, didn't he, about stress?
Yeah, a great one. If you put more stress on a bone, maybe start playing tennis or even just gain weight, your body responds. It actually adds more trabeculae, those little beams, and arranges them specifically to handle that new stress pattern. It adapts. It's a living tissue, constantly responding.
Fascinating. And thinking about how they start, Dr. Hoffman mentioned they don't start as bone.
Right. For most bones, the skeleton actually starts out as cartilage, hyaline cartilage specifically. The skull's a bit different, starts as membranes, but either way, it's a softer template.
Which then hardens.
Yeah, through a process called ossification, it gradually solidifies into bone.
And how do long bones, like in your arms and legs, actually get longer?
Dr. Hoffman explains that. You have the main shaft, the diaphysis, and the ends, the epiphysis. Between them, in kids and teenagers, are the epiphyseal plates.
Growth plates.
Exactly, growth plates. They're made of cartilage. New cartilage is added. And the older cartilage near the diaphysis turns into bone. That's what lengthens the bone. This happens up to about age 20 or so.
And then they stop.
Yep. The plates themselves ossify, turn into bone, and leave behind what's called an epiphyseal line. That line means bone growth and length is done. You've reached your adult height.
But the remodeling continues even after growth stops.
Absolutely. Remodeling is different from growth. It happens your whole life. Dr. Hoffman used that great Lego analogy.
Oh, yeah, the Lego model.
Right. It's like having this huge Lego structure, and every day you're taking out a few specific bricks and putting new ones back in their place. The overall shape stays the same, but the individual parts are constantly being refreshed.
And there are specific cells doing this Lego swap.
Yep, a whole team. You've got osteoclasts, think like it's like clash or break. They're the demolition crew breaking down old bone.
Okay.
Then osteoblasts, think blast, like build. They're the construction crew laying down new bone material.
Got it. Builders and destroyers.
And then osteocytes. These are mature osteoblasts that get kind of trapped in the bone they built. They act like site managers, maintaining the bone and sensing when remodeling is needed. It's this continuous, balanced cycle.
So what does all this mean for you, the listener? Well, next time you hear about someone breaking a bone, you'll know it's not just snap and set. It's this complex, four-stage biological construction project.
Dr. Hoffman details those stages really clearly. First, right after the break, you get hematoma formation. Basically, a big blood clot forms, like an internal scab, seals things off.
Stage one, the clot.
Stage two, that clot gets replaced by something stronger, but still flexible fibrocartilage. This forms a sort of soft callus, stabilizing the break a bit more.
Okay, fibrocartilage callus.
Stage three is the bony callus formation. That fibrocartilage starts to ossify, turning into hard, spongy bone. Now the bone can actually bear some weight again, but it's bulky, not quite right yet.
Which is like a rough patch job.
Kind of, yeah. Which leads to stage four, bone remodeling. Over months, even years, those osteoclasts and osteoblasts get to work on that bony callus. They reshape it, refining it back to the bone's original form.
And Dr. Hoffman mentioned it can even end up stronger.
Often, yeah. The healed area can sometimes be even stronger than it was originally. It's a pretty amazing self-repair system.
Okay, so shifting gears a bit from the microscopic, Dr. Hoffman also maps out the big picture of the overall skeleton. He divides it up.
Right, into two main sections. First is the axial skeleton. Think axis. It's the core running right down the middle.
So the skull?
Skull, vertebral column, the spine and the ribs, that central trunk.
And everything else.
That's the appendicular skeleton. Think appendages. It's everything appended onto or attached to that axial core.
So arms, legs?
Arms, legs, plus the girdles that connect them. The pectoral girdle, that's your shoulder blades and collarbones, and the pelvic girdle, your hip bones, and the sacrum. Though technically the sacrum is axial, but it links the spine to the pelvis.
Gotcha. And Dr. Hoffman dropped a pretty wild statistic about the appendicular skeleton, didn't he? About the number of bones.
Oh, yeah. It's mind-blowing. Out of 206 bones in an adult, over half 106 bones are just in your hands and feet combined.
Wow. 106. Why so many small bones there?
Dexterity. Dr. Hoffman explains it allows for incredibly fine, delicate movements. Think about all the things you can do with your fingers. If you just had a couple of big bones there, forget about it.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Structure enabling function. Okay, let's zoom in on some key bones Dr. Hoffman highlights.
Yeah.
Starting at the top, the skull. Not just one bone, right?
Not at all. It's 22 bones fused together. He breaks it down. 8 cranial bones making the brain case, actually touching the brain, and 14 facial bones that sort of hang off the front, creating your face structure.
And you mentioned the baby skull thing, the soft spots.
Yeah, the fontanelles. Those gaps allow the skull to deform a bit during birth and also let the brain grow rapidly. Eventually, they close up and become sutures, those immovable jagged joints between the skull bones.
And some specific skull bones he mentioned. Temporal bones.
Yeah, your temples. He noted they get their name because hair often grays there first, indicating time, then the occipital bone at the back.
With the bump.
Right, the external occipital protuberance. Often more prominent in males, so it's one clue for sexing a skeleton. And of course, the jaws, upper maxillae, and the lower mandible, the only one that moves freely.
Okay, moving down slightly. The hyoid bone. This one's unique.
Totally unique. The Lone Ranger, as Dr. Hoffman calls it, it's the only bone in the body that doesn't articulate, doesn't form a joint with any other bone.
So how does it stay put?
It's held in place by muscles and ligaments in the neck. It's crucial for swallowing and speech, anchoring tongue and throat muscles.
Very cool. All right, the vertebral column. The spine.
Dual role here, Dr. Hoffman emphasizes, protects the supersensitive spinal cord, but also allows flexibility. A segmented protector.
Made of lots of little bones, the vertebrae.
Exactly. Each allows just a tiny bit of movement, but add them all up, and you get significant bending and twisting, all while that spinal cord stays safe inside its bony tunnel.
Dr. Hoffman breaks them down by region. Cervical.
Yep. C1 to C7 in the neck. He says they look elegant, kind of small. C1 is the atlas, holding up the skull, lets you nod yes. C2 is the axis that has a pivot point letting you shake your head no.
And they have extra holes.
Unique feature, yeah. 3 holes, called foramina, 1 for the spinal cord and 2 smaller ones for blood vessels going up to the brain. Only the cervicals have those extra 2.
Then below that, thoracic.
T1 to T12 in your test area. These connect to the ribs. Dr. Hoffman has a fun visual cue. He says they look like giraffe heads from the side.
Huh. Okay, giraffe heads and then lumbar.
L1 to L5, the lower back. These are the heavy lifters. Dr. Hoffman says they look like moose heads from the side, and you can see their bodies get much bigger and chunkier as you go down because they have to support more weight.
Moose heads, got it. Is there an easy way to remember the numbers? 7, 12, 5.
Dr. Hoffman's mnemonic. Breakfast at 7, cervical. Lunch at noon, 12, thoracic. And dinner at 5, lumbar.
Perfect. Breakfast at 7, lunch at 12, dinner at 5. Love it. And below the lumbar.
You have the sacrum, which is several vertebrae fused together, and the coccyx, the tailbone, also fused.
And between the vertebrae, the discs, you hear about slip discs all the time?
Yeah, Dr. Hoffman clarifies that's not really accurate. They don't slip out, they herniate. The tough outer layer tears and the jelly-like inside bulges out, potentially pressing on nerves. That's what causes the pain.
Herniated, not slipped. Good distinction. Okay, the rib cage.
12 pairs, 24 ribs total. Dr. Hoffman divides them up. True ribs are pairs 1 to 7. They connect directly to the sternum, the breastbone, with their own strip of cartilage.
Okay, direct connection, true ribs.
Then you have false ribs, 8 through 12. They don't connect directly. Ribs 8, 9, and 10 connect to the cartilage of the rib above them.
Sort of piggybacking.
Exactly. And then 11 and 12 are the floating ribs. They only attach to the vertebrae in the back. They don't connect to anything in the front. Gives your sides a bit more give.
Right. Now, connecting the limbs, the girdles, pectoral first.
Pectoral girdle is your shoulder setup. Clavicles, collarbones out front, and scapulae, shoulder blades in the back, allows that huge range of motion for your arms.
And the pelvic girdle
forms that bony ring at the base of your torso. It's the two big os coxae, the hip bones, fused with the sacrum at the back.
And Dr. Hoffman mentioned this is really useful for determining sex.
Yeah, he says it's the much better way than just looking at the skull bump. The overall angle of the pelvic inlet and the subpubic angle, it's generally wider, more U-shaped in females for childbirth, and narrower, more V-shaped in males.
Interesting. And the os coxa itself is actually three bones fused together.
That's right. When you're born, they're separate, but they fuse. You've got the ilium, the big flared upper part you feel as your hip bone. The ischium is the lower back part, your sitting bones.
Oh, what you're sitting on right now.
Pretty much. And the pubis is the front part, where the two hip bones meet. That pubic symphysis joint has cartilage that softens in females during pregnancy.
Amazing adaptations. Okay,
yeah.
Let's quickly run through the limbs. Upper limb first. Dr. Hoffman was specific about terminology.
Yes. Anatomically, the arm, or brachium, is just the upper part, from shoulder to elbow, that has one bone, the humerus.
Okay, arm, humerus. Then the forearm.
Forearm, or antebrachium, is elbow to wrist. Two bones there, the radius and the ulna. And he made that neat point about hand rotation.
Pronation and supination.
Right. When you flip your palm up or down, it's mostly the radius rotating around the more fixed ulna carrying a hand with it.
Clever. And the hand itself?
Yeah.
Manis?
Yeah.
Complex. You've got the carpus, the wrist, with eight small carpal bones.
Yeah.
Then the metacarpals, five long bones forming the palm. And finally, the phalanges, the finger bones, 14 in each hand. Two for the thumb, three for each finger.
14. Wow. Okay. Lower limb, thigh.
Thigh is just one bone again? The femur. Dr. Hoffman highlights this is the largest, longest, strongest bone in your whole body. Has to be, to support your weight.
Makes sense. And the leg, neat angle.
Leg has two bones, the tibia and the fibula. Dr. Hoffman stressed the tibia is the big one, the main weight-bearing bone, connects to the femur at the knee. Shin bone, basically.
And the fibula.
It's the thinner one on the outside, the lateral side. It doesn't bear direct weight, but acts like a strut, helps stabilize the ankle, and provides muscle attachment points.
Okay. Tibia for weight. Fibula for stability. And the foot. Pedis.
Similar setup to the hand, but adapted for weight-bearing and walking. Tarsus is the ankle. Seven tarsal bones, including your heel bone. Metatarsals are the five long bones forming the arch. And phalanges, again, for the toes. 14, just like the fingers. Two for the big toe. Three for each of the others. So that's quite the tour. We've really done a deep dive into Dr. Hoffman's insights, haven't we? It's way more than just a static frame.
Absolutely. Support, protection, movement, breathing, this incredible chemical reservoir, blood production, it's constantly active.
Yeah, we looked at the compact and spongy structure, how it grows, how it's always remodeling with those osteoblasts and lechblasts.
Like that Lego model.
Exactly. And how it heals itself through those four stages. It's pretty remarkable stuff.
And mapping it all out, axial versus appendicular, zooming in on the skull, the unique hyoid, the amazing vertebral column, the girdles, all those bones in the hands and feet. Dr. Hoffman really illuminates how every piece has a purpose.
It truly paints a picture of the skeleton as this dynamic living system, essential to, well, pretty much everything we do.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
So maybe the next time you stretch or walk or even just take a breath, think about that silent, dynamic work happening inside you. And maybe ask yourself, what other parts of my body that seem unmoving are actually buzzing with activity beneath the surface?
A great thought to leave folks with. Keep curious.